Good evening and welcome to the library. I'm glad you can all join us this evening. My name is Carrie Silverman. I'm the head of the Children's Library. And tonight we have a very special guest.
I heard you were going to have Jim Dale here this evening, and I am such a big fan of his. Oh, my gosh. I've been crazy about his work ever since I watched Pete's Dragon, like, a million times when I was a kid, and he goes, Potamaquassi, no, Pacquamasati, no, Passamamassi, no, Quatamapati, no, anyway. And then he was so great in Barnum, and he won the Tony Award, and he goes, hear the tuba play that oom-pa-pa, oh my, ain't it driving you crazy? Don't you be so darn lazy, better hurry and join that big parade. When he walked the high wire, it was so amazing. And oh gosh, he's done loads of theater, Shakespeare, and everything, and movies. And I saw him in A Christmas Carol at Madison Square Garden, and everybody said, let it shine through the night, and God bless us, everyone. And then I got to see him in Candide on Broadway, proving that this is the best of all possible worlds. All's for the best in this best of all possible worlds. And he played at least 5 parts. It was really wow. But that was just practice for doing all the audiobooks of the Harry Potter series, where he played all the parts, hundreds and hundreds of them, and he won 2 Grammy Awards, loads of other awards for all his audiobooks recordings. And I tell you, when I'm in a bad mood, I just go and listen to the night bus scene from Prisoner of Azkaban, you know, because it always cracks me up when he does that bit where he goes, not now, thanks, I'm pickling some slugs. Oh, it just kills me. Anyway, and now he's recorded Eudora Welty's The Shoebird with the Seattle Symphony Orchestra, and today he's here to do it for us, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Jim Dale.
I don't believe that intro. I'm taking this lady with me wherever I do a reading in the future. You've got yourself a job for years. That was lovely. Thank you. Well, first of all, I'd just like to say welcome, and thank you so much for coming along instead of spending your time in the park, which I would do if I was... Anyway, the fact is you're here, and I'm very grateful for you to turn up. Let's ask a few questions, first of all. Have any of you heard of a thing, a little piece of music with a narrator called Peter and the Wolf? Yes? Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Because what you have there, you have an orchestra, and you have a narrator, and he starts telling you the story. Then the orchestra comes in, and the orchestra starts playing various instruments that remind you of the birds, etc. So that's a lovely story. But that was done 50, 60, or I think even 70 years ago. And there hasn't really been anything as good as that in all these years, except recently when one of the stories by a very, very famous lady called Eudora Welty, she's one of the best female writers in America, and she wrote one story for children. It was 55,000 words long, so that's a book about that thick. And so what's happened is we took that book that was 55,000 words and squashed it down and edited out until we just got about 20 minutes of dialogue out of it. And then the writer, Sam Jones, he put it to music and created it for the Seattle Symphony Orchestra. And this is about a 100-piece orchestra. And even that wasn't big enough. He said, let's get a choir. So they got 60 boys and girls, about 15, 16, 17 years of age. And they recorded the songs. The narrator narrates the story. And the narrator has to do an impression of 14 different English-speaking birds. See, so it's great fun, and it could be great fun at school, you know, when eventually you do it at school, because one of you would be the narrator, and then another 14 of you would be an individual little bird, and you'd all have different voices, and you can do it your own way. But in this instance, I was asked if not only would I narrate it, but would I do all the voices for all the birds, because they'd obviously heard me do the Harry Potter books. And they just wanted to know, could I do this? So they put down the tracks first, the track meaning the music. They recorded the music first, and then I went into a studio many, many weeks later, and I listened to the music, and when the man pointed at me, because I can't read music, I can't read it, I don't know what it means. So I was listening, and he would point at me, and then I'd start and narrate, then he'd say, stop. And then the music would come on again. That's how we did it. But eventually we decided to do a concert. And so I went to Seattle, And I walked into this theater. It was a huge theater, and we had 100 people, in the orchestra, symphony orchestra. And then the choir arrived, and there were 60 of them. And then we started to rehearse. And gradually, after the rehearsal, 2,000 children came into the theater, 2,000 of them. And I started off, and I forgot it. Can you believe it? I forgot it. I lost my way in the script. The conductor had to stop the orchestra and say, "Where are you?" I said, "I have no idea." She said, "Start off with the B flat and the flattened seventh, ninth." I said, "I have no idea what you're talking about. I can't read music." She said, "All right, well, after three, one, two, three." So we did it, and it took. Anyway, the audience loved it. The children loved it, and they were very interested in it, because you can tell when children aren't interested, when they're bored. They all keep running up the aisle to go to the toilet. Have you noticed? They do. They just can't keep still. But in this team, they could. They were standing there wanting to go like this, but they didn't. In fact, I said there wasn't a dry seat in the house afterwards. It was wonderful. So anyway, so what we're going to do tonight, I'm going to try doing it without the orchestra. What I've brought along is this little, whatever you call it. It's got all the songs in. That's an iPod, thank you. I put it on the iPod a few hours ago, and I bought the loudspeaker here. I don't know whether this is going to work, but what I'd like to do is just play you like the overture, and perhaps 2 or 3 minutes of myself speaking on the tape or on the CD and listening to the choir, just to give you an idea of what that the whole CD sounds like. And then what will happen, I'll take this off and I'll pick up the story from where I left off. How about that? You ready for this? I haven't tried this before. This could be most embarrassing for all of us, especially for me. This is the overture. Arturo the parrot worked in a shoe store. You know how parrots like to repeat everything they hear. Arturo was no exception. He repeated everything he heard, and that's why this whole story happened, as you are about to hear. One day, a little boy whose name was Robbie and his mother came to the store to buy Robbie a pair of shoes. Not a new pair of sneakers, he already had those, but a pair of dress-up shoes. Robbie was irritated. He wanted to be home playing with his collection of trading cards. When they left the store, he let everybody know how he felt. With an old-fashioned expression he had heard his mother use, he yelled sarcastically over his shoulder, "Shoes are for the birds!" "Shoes are for the birds" means something like, "I don't like shoes," or "shoes stink," or "shoes yeah." But guess who heard what Robbie said? Arturo the parrot. And he thought, "This is very interesting. Shoes are for the birds." "For the birds? That's us. I must repeat this to all my friends. Or better yet, if I just tell Gloria the goose, she'll tell everybody. Shoes are for the birds. Shoes are for the birds."
Shoes are for the birds. Shoes are for the birds. Shoes are for the birds. Tell everybody. Shoes are for the birds. Shoes are for the birds. Pass it on, pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. Pass it on, pass it on, pass it on, pass it on, pass it on. Tell everybody. Shoes are for the birds. Shoes are for the birds. Pass it on, 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 pass it on.
And pass it on is exactly what she did. Gloria the Goose told every bird she saw, and she asked them to tell every bird they saw. And when she told the carrier pigeon, she said,
Please carry this message to every bird wherever you fly, all over the world. And before you could blink a bird's eye, Gloria the Goose's message had gone out to all birds everywhere. And here's what the message said.
A mysterious meeting of earthly importance to all the birds of the air. The
didn't hear every word of that song. What they were saying was a mysterious meeting of footling importance to all the birds of the air will be held at the shoe store where Arturo the parrot sells children's shoes by the pair. This meeting is due to begin at sundown, and it mustn't catch you unaware, this mysterious meeting of footling importance to all the birds of the air. Now, all the birds of the air, every species chose one of its kind to come to this mysterious meeting of the birds. And as the sun started to set behind the trees, something never seen before began to happen. From every direction, from all corners of the earth, the sky began to fill with birds. And there were birds of all kinds. There were birds of all sizes and birds of all shapes. There were black birds, red birds, blue birds, and jays, and birds of every different color. And then, one by one, they began to fly through an open window into the office of the shoe store where Arturo was finishing up his work for the day. And first came the robin, then came a crow, and then came an owl, and she took a seat on the coat rack. And there was a seagull on the water cooler, a woodpecker on the computer, and a secretary bird seated at the desk. 36 different kinds of sparrows lined up on the bookshelf. A pigeon threw in to an old-fashioned desk and squeezed into the pigeon hold. And all the birds found themselves places to perch. Around and around the room there were rows and rows of birds, like balcony upon balcony at a symphony hall. And finally, with a proud flourish, in flew Gloria the Goose. "Well, Arturo," she said, "here we are, all the birds of the air. Now it's up to you to give us what we came for."
What?
Sputtered Arturo.
"What we came for? What do you mean it's up to me to give you what you came for? Well, I took you at your word. Remember what you said? Shoes are for the birds. So, with the help of the carrier pigeon, pass it on is what I did," insisted Gloria. "And since you work in a shoe store, it's up to you to make good on your promise."
Now, at that point, slowly and with great dignity, Minerva the owl edged herself forward.
"Arturo," she said, "everybody's extremely curious about this mysterious meeting. Why, lots of birds don't even know what shoes are. I do, of course, since I'm a wise old owl and everybody knows we owls know everything. But if shoes are for the birds, we want to know what they are."
Arturo answered,
"Well, of course I can tell you what shoes are."
But before he could say another word, Mickey, the mockingbird, jumped off his perch and flew around, flitting his wings for emphasis. He mocked them all, saying,
"Shoes for a bird? That's absurd." "It's not as absurd as you think," replied Arturo.
"No, no, no, he's right," said Minerva. "Shoes are for wearing. People wear them all the time. Here, let me show you how."
And she took a pair of doll's shoes from the display on the counter and put them on her ears. She proudly modeled the shoes on her ears, turning her head from left to right.
But since most of you, she said, have only indifferent ear tufts compared to mine, you'll have to wear your shoes like people do on your feet. Hold it! Hold it! Honked Gloria the Goose. Let me help! Where are those shoes, anyway?
Don't you see them? Asked Arturo. They're all stacked up in the shelves. Shoes come in boxes.
Silly goose.
I'm not silly, thank you, Gloria snapped back. And you're the one to talk with that huge beak.
Now, said Minerva, we'll never get anyone fitted in shoes tonight if you do keep talking like that. Gloria, since you spread the word about this meeting, why don't you get down the shoe boxes while Arturo gets busy fitting everybody? So Gloria the Goose waddled over to the ladder. Then she climbed the ladder laboriously, step by step, to reach the first pair of shoes. With her beak, she started pulling out the first box she saw. She didn't realize that all the other boxes were stacked on top of it. So she pulled and she pulled. She tugged and she tugged. And then she finally began to get it loose, and surprise, down tumbled every shoebox in the store. The shoes tumbled out right and left all over the carpet. The jays and the crows all shrieked in excitement. But Arturo shouted over the noise,
"Please, Mr. Blue Jay, please, Miss Grey Jay, please, Mr. Common Crow and Fish Crow, and all you crows and jays, please, stop flying around. Just take your seats, and before you know it, we'll have a pair of shoes for everybody. Now, who will be first? Good, one of the sparrows. Gloria, will you hand me a pair of shoes for the song sparrow, please?"
But Gloria brought out a huge rain boot, which was way too big for a sparrow. And when Arturo tried to fit the sparrow's foot into the rain boot, what happened to the sparrow? It went right down into the boot and out of sight. So Arturo tried again by adding another sparrow. And the same thing happened. Same thing happened. Then one sparrow more, and the boot swallowed it up just like the others.
"You're just throwing good sparrows after bad," taunted Mickey the Mockingbird.
But Arturo stayed calm and kept adding sparrows until all the whole flock of 36 was in the boot. You could hear a lot of sparrow chirps, but you couldn't see a single sparrow. Reluctantly, Arturo called down to them,
"Come out, little sparrows, come on. We'll have to fit you later with something a little smaller. Maybe we'll have better luck with a bigger bird. How about you, Mr. Ostrich? Gloria, will you get a pair of shoes for Mr. Ostrich? Please."
And the ostrich slowly and solemnly came forward. Now this time, Gloria decided to try something smaller, and she brought out a pair of hiking shoes. But when the ostrich put out his big foot, it covered the shoe entirely, and the shoe disappeared.
"Why, your feet are the wrong size too," exclaimed the goose.
She was trying hard, but she was finding it harder to find a foot to fit a shoe than to find a shoe to fit a foot. Especially, of course, a bird's foot.
"Nobody fits," she said at last. "Oh, dear, dear me." "I have an idea," said Arturo. "Let's have a sail." "Oh, yes, let's have a sail," exclaimed a goldfinch, who loved to fly more than any other bird,
except maybe the seagull.
"I love to fly through the air."
And he immediately started to fly around the room, making his graceful roller coaster loops, singing to the top of his little lungs,
"Pachickory! Pachickory!" That's lovely, Mr. Goldfish," said Arturo, interrupting one of the goldfish's aerial somersaults. But that's not the kind of sail I had in mind. Every time we have a sail in the shoe store, we reduce the price of the shoes. But see, here in my dictionary, one of the meanings to reduce is to make something smaller. I don't see why we can't use this meaning to make the shoes themselves smaller. That way they ought to fit our very small bird's feet.
So he reached into his desk drawer and brought out three signs. One of them said, "Sale. These shoes are greatly reduced." The second sign said, "Shoes greatly reduced." The third one said, "Final reduction."
"Now," he said, "we shall be able to use these to get just the right size for everybody."
And sure enough, it worked. The very next pair of shoes Arturo tried fit perfectly.
"Arturo, what made you so clever?" asked Gloria. No, I'm not really clever, answered the parrot. I may have a bird's brain, but I try to make the most of the brains that I have. And with that, both Arturo the parrot and Gloria the goose went to work, fitting all the birds with specially sized shoes. There, we've finished, said Arturo. Not quite, said Gloria. Here's a pair for you. And she brought out a pair of brown alligator shoes, which didn't need too much reducing to fit Arturo's feet. And now, for me, said Gloria, and she reached for a pair of beautiful golden dancing shoes with diamonds on the toes. Now, this was a special pair of shoes which had been going round and round in the display, and since they hadn't been in a box, nobody had thought about wearing them, except Gloria. She'd been eyeing them all the time. I get the grand prize, since I thought up this whole party. I get the golden slippers, she said. Big surprise, said Mickey the Mockingbird sarcastically. Glory the Goose gets the prize. Ah, now, children, now, chided Minerva the Owl. Gloria was a little cagey in saving the prettiest shoes for herself, but after all, she did come up with the idea for this meeting. Well, I suppose it is turning into a party, so I think we should let her have the golden slippers as our way of saying thank you for these wonderful shoes. What? Sputtered Arturo again. He liked to sputter. These shoes? These shoes are no gift. This is a shoe store. You have to pay for them. Well, then I'll pay for them, said Gloria the Goose, and right then and there she laid a big golden egg. Now that much there ought to pay for every shoe in the store, she stated proudly, and they all agreed it was the most beautiful golden egg they had ever seen. Hey, now that we have the shoes on, what do we do next? Asked a cardinal. We have to break them in, said Arturo, by walking. Walking? Asked the goldfish. Walking? Echoed all the other birds. Yes, walking, answered Arturo. Just line up behind me, and we'll parade around and around the store. We'll break in our shoes with a grand promenade. Wait, chirped the robin. I can't walk. I'm a hopper. But that's perfectly all right, replied Arturo reassuringly. Just be sure you don't hop right out of those beautiful new shoes. Then all the birds joined the parade, hopping along awkwardly, taking care not to lose their new shoes. Look, said Gloria, outside the window. Well, well, would you look at that, exclaimed Minerva the Owl. We have a most unusual visitor. This is the Dodo. Now Madame Dodo approached the group and whispered, Is this the mysterious convocation of the birds? Well, it's turning into a shoe party, I think, said Minerva. But yes, this is it. Arturo said with a bow, Madam Dodo, I'm sure I speak for every bird here when I say it's a great honor to welcome you to the shoe store. But how did you get here? We thought you were extinct. What? Does she stink? Asked Gloria the Goose. No, silly, she doesn't stink. She's extinct, Arturo answered sharply. That means that they are all dead. There are no more dodos in the world. But she's not dead, said Gloria. She's here. Yes, I'm here, said the dodo. But it's just my spirit that has returned. It is true, she added sadly. I am extinct. But how did you get extinct? Asked the blue jay, who was never bashful about asking questions. And Madame Dodo answered, Well, first my curiosity went, and then my wings, and after that I had nothing to live for.
Then why have you come back? Said the jay.
When I heard that all the birds would be gathered together in one place, I had to come to see my friends once more. I came for love, and to find out if I'm still remembered. "We'll remember you, Madam Dodo, and we love you," called the birds in chorus.
"Thank you," said the Dodo, "and I shall remember you. Now, I must be going. Goodbye."
"Wait," said Minerva.
"What for?"
she answered. And Minerva the Owl answered, "Wait, because anything may happen next in this strange and marvelous world. Maybe through the mistake of a parrot, maybe through the wisdom of an owl, birds may wear shoes and men may fly to the stars. But as a goose knows, there'll always be something to happen next."
"That's the future,"
the Dodo pointed out. "When you're extinct, you don't think about the future. But you do think good and hard about what lasts. Will you remember the two things stronger than extinction?"
"Oh, yes," they cried. "They are memory and love."
And before you knew it, the Dodo dissolved into a wisp of smoke and floated out of the window like a leaf on the wind. The robin stood looking up at the window where the Dodo had disappeared. He thought,
"We all came in that window, but now it seems so high. These shoes are great for walking, but they sure make it hard to fly."
And he flapped extra hard to see if he could get off the ground, but the shoes kept him firmly in place.
"My," he said breathlessly, "how will we ever get out of here?"
"Don't worry, Mr. Robin,"
said Arturo.
"You can go out by the door marked Freddy."
He nodded towards a little door at floor level, which would swing from the top on its brass hinges.
"What's a Freddy?"
said the robin.
"The question is, who's Freddy?" "Freddy's a cat,"
answered Arturo. And at that moment they heard a terrifying noise from outside the door.
"Meow!"
And the door swung open and in walked Freddy the cat. Now, you know that a cat is not a bird's best friend. What do you suppose the birds did? Except for Arturo, who knew Freddy, and he wasn't afraid of him, they all started flapping their wings frantically, trying to fly away, but with the shoes on their feet, they couldn't move. Try as they might, with their wings fluttering and their voices chirruping with fear, they were a teeming mass of terrified birds roiling and rolling on the floor. "Oh, what a night," they cried. "Try as we might, we can't fly with our shoes on. We're caught with our boots on. We are so afraid. Never in our life did we ever think we'd be in such a horrible predicament. Help!"
The cat sat back on his haunches and shook his head. "This beats everything I've ever seen," he said with a smirk on his face. You birds look absolutely silly with those shoes on. I just sit here and enjoy the show before I decide which of you I'll eat first."
"Freddy!"
Arturo exclaimed, clapping his bill as loudly as he could.
"What's gotten into you? I've never seen you act this way before. Usually you're a friendly, sociable cat, content to chase a mouse or two."
But Freddy ignored Arturo and looked the birds over to see who he would choose as his first victim.
"Maybe a nice, plump
starling," he said, and he made a lunge towards a frightened bird. The starling ducked and screeched at Freddy as he passed by. Then Mickey the Mockingbird started mocking again. Not the cat, but the starling.
"Fiddle-de-foe, what a show! Did you ever see a starling snarling?"
"Mickey," cried Gloria the Goose,
"whose side are you on anyway?"
"I'm always choose the winning side," the mockingbird replied.
Then the cat set its sights on a beautiful multicolored wood duck.
"Look at you, my pretty," he said. "You look good enough to eat."
And he took a swipe at the wood duck. The wood duck barely got out of the way, fear written all over his face. And once more, Mickey mocked the bird that Freddy was attacking.
"Hiddledy half, what a laugh. Did you ever see a wood duck terror-struck?"
And this time it was Minerva the Owl who called to the mockingbird.
"Mickey, don't you have any loyalty to the bird family? What are you doing?"
Let you birds of a feather flock fearfully together. I'm siding with Freddy, he answered. Then the cat took several quick passes at a jay and a quail, and was even bold enough to taunt an owl and a hawk, and they all jumped and scrambled out of the way as best they could in their heavy shoes. This time, Mickey turned cartwheels as he mocked, Higgledy-hade, what a charade! Did you ever see a quail flail, a jay pray, an owl howl, a hawk squawk? And the birds, thoroughly angry now at both Mickey and the mockingbird and Freddy the cat, pulled together in a tight group and stood their ground, defiantly facing them both. And then, can you believe it, the cat backed down.
Oh, well, who cares anyway, Freddy muttered. It's no fun to chase a bird with shoes on. It's too easy.
And he sat down on the stool and began licking his paws and taking his bath. Now Arturo realized somebody had to do something, because even though Freddy had stopped threatening them for a moment, he might change his mind at any time. So, using his head, he started hooking his way up the wall. And in his cloak of brilliant feathers, he rose up the wall, inch by the power of his magnificent hinged beak. He reached the windowsill. He stood on it. Then he yelled to all outdoors, "Free the birds! Free the birds!" Then the birds joined Arturo in his desperate call, "Help! Help! Free the birds! May we expect a reply at your earliest convenience? Please, please, free the birds! Is anybody out there? Free the birds!" The whole night seemed to listen. And finally, someone heard their call. Out of that darkest moment, the store all at once grew colored like the east at sunrise. It was the most wondrous bird of all creation who answered, the firebird, the magnificent phoenix. The phoenix flew down through the sky in his red plumes, and now with his eyes sparkling like rubies, he lowered himself on his powerful, gently moving wings.
Grandfather Phoenix, what a surprise and honor, said Minerva.
Oh, thank you, Grandfather Phoenix, said Arturo. You heard our call. You've come to save us.
No, replied the phoenix. I'm afraid you'll have to save yourselves. But I will be able to show you how. What a sad predicament you've gotten yourselves into. It almost brings tears to my eyes.
And impudent as ever, Mickey chimed in.
Did you ever see a phoenix need a Kleenex?
Mickey, cracked Gloria the Goose, don't you have any respect for the prince of the birds? Let Michael be, the phoenix decreed. He has a fearful lesson coming. Now, first things first, Frederick, he called to the cat. He always used full names, not nicknames. Frederick, we don't like your attitude. Get ready to leave this store immediately, or suffer the consequences. And as he said that, he flexed his magnificent red wings into an awesome display. And for once, Freddy was the one who was terrified, and he began looking around for a way to escape. Sensing the cat's fear and the bird's new power, Mickey decided to change sides yet again, and he threw an insult, this time at Freddy.
Higgledy hat, he said. What a brat! Did you ever see a cat scat?
But Freddy, who didn't like to be insulted, said, don't you mock me! And in an instant, he swooped Mickey up in the claw of one hand and swallowed him. Boot, bone, and all. And with that, Freddy dashed out of his little swinging cat door and escaped.
He's gone! He's gone! Cried the blue jay.
They're both gone! Exulted the wood duck.
And all the birds broke into song. Grandfather Phoenix, they sang. You saved us from the cat's claws and the mockingbird's taunts. You freed the birds. But Grandfather Phoenix cocked his head, raised one of his primary feathers, and said,
no, dear friends, I didn't free you. The cat is gone, but you're not free yet. As I told you, you'll have to save yourselves.
We won't hear of it, said Gloria the Goose. Of course you freed us. You must let us thank you for it. Oh, by the way, we birds have really come up in the world since you last saw us. Notice anything different about us, like beautiful new shoes?
Those shoes have cost you too much, the phoenix replied. And then the jay blurted out,
Why, Grandfather Phoenix, you're barefooted.
My, my, said Arturo, we have to do something about that. Gloria, Gloria, choose a special pair of shoes for Grandfather Phoenix, please.
But before Gloria could move, the phoenix said,
Thank you, but no shoes for me. They would have taken away my special gift. I'm afraid they have already taken yours away.
What? We're the same as before. We just look better with shoes on, hiding our skinny feet. What special gift are you talking about?
Asked the jay. And the phoenix replied,
In your question lies the answer. Think. How did you get here?
And with that, he stepped off the windowsill and floated majestically away, carried by his broad, beautiful red wings.
In your question lies the answer, Gloria thought out loud about what the phoenix had said. The answer is already in the question. What was the question?
I think it had to do with our special gift, replied Minerva the owl. The jay had just asked, What special gift are you talking about?
I believe I know what Grandfather Phoenix was talking about, said the goldfinch. Did you see his magnificent wings as he flew away? It makes me want to use mine.
But as hard as he tried, he couldn't soar and sail through the air as long as he had his shoes on, and the heavy things kept him tied to the ground.
That's it, said Arturo. He was trying to make us remember our wings.
And they all began to sing and chirp excitedly.
Our wings! Our wings! Our special gift! Because once we could fly high up in the sky, and once we could sail over hill and dale, and once we could soar beyond the shore, but that was before we forgot our wings! Our wings! Because once we were free to fly to a tree, but now when we try to sail through the sky, there's something amiss that keeps us like this. There's no way to soar when you're stuck to the floor in our shoes. What's special for birds is not our words, it's not our views, it's not these shoes, it's none of these things, it's simply our wings. Our wings. We can fly.
Well, said the blue jay, it's clear that we gotta get rid of these shoes. They keep us from using our wings.
Yes, but off with these shoes, cried the crows, and the sparrows, and the buntings.
Not so fast, countered Gloria the Goose. These shoes do dress up our feet. And she twirled a lovely little pirouette in her golden slippers. But Arturo answered,
Gloria, your feet were quite beautiful even before you put shoes on. And when you swim in the pond, won't you find your web feet much more useful than those fancy shoes?
Well, I guess you're right, she reluctantly replied.
Of course he's right, Minerva responded. Shoes are for people, not for birds. Who got that idea started, anyway?
And Arturo sheepishly admitted,
I'm afraid it was I. I heard a little boy in the store this morning say that shoes are for the birds, and I guess I've learnt you have to look a little deeper to see what words really mean.
And if you just wouldn't repeat everything you hear, said Gloria dryly.
You too, admonished Minerva, always carping at each other. If we took everything you said at face value, we'd never know that you two were the very best of friends. Now, I think it's time for a vote. What say you, all the birds of the world? Shoes or no shoes?
No shoes, said the birds. Give us back our feet. No shoes. Shoes are obsolete. No shoes.
And with that, all the birds of the air kicked off their shoes and they flew in a magnificent cloud out of the shoe store window and away, away, back to the four corners of the earth. Some of them remembered their manners and said over their wings as they flew away, "Thanks for a nice party." But, as you might have expected, three of the birds remained behind. Arturo, because he worked in the shoe store. Gloria, because she wanted to help her best friend Arturo clean up and put away the big pile of shoes. And Minerva, who wanted to talk with them about the fantastic experience they had just had. She couldn't help it. She was always drawing a lesson from her experiences. And that's what makes owls so wise. And what was the lesson that she drew from this story? Or to use the words of another great storyteller, what was the moral of this tale? Actually, Minerva found two lessons or morals. The first came from the phoenix. In the question lies the answer. And the second was, don't ignore your special gift. And then Arturo said, I found a moral too. Don't take everything at face value. And Gloria spoke up with her moral. Make the most of the brains you have. Then they all remembered the haunting message of the dodo. Two things are stronger than death. Two things, memory and love. Then they all remembered. And that's the story of Arturo the shoebird and his friends. And they have remained friends until this very day. The end.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we got through that. Thank you very much. So isn't that a great story? Can you imagine it with a symphony orchestra and 60 children singing all the songs? That there are many, 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 many songs in them. And I do hope if you buy the CD that you're going to enjoy it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Now, we have a little question and answer. If anybody, any of the children have any questions, I'd like to hear the children's questions first. Then we can have some questions from the adults. Any children like to ask me a question about anything recording about Harry Potter or Pete's Dragon or you name it, I'll try and answer it. Any questions? Well, look at you, you're all so shy. Either that or you don't have any questions, which is wonderful. It means I've done a good job. Well, yes, here's a question. I'll give you an hour to think about it. I couldn't quite hear like the firebird, you are lovely. Thank you very much indeed. Took a long time to get it out, but nevertheless, that was a compliment. Yes, little one. Oh, that's a good question. The question was, how do I remember all these voices? In Harry Potter, there were quite a few, weren't there? Do you remember that? I think one book had 134, and then the final book had 146. So what happens is that when I'm reading the book, and I don't have much time to read the book. They give the book to me on Saturday morning, and I'm supposed to be in the studio on Monday recording it. So it doesn't give me time to read the book. I can read about 100 pages, and then I invent the voices for the 100 pages. But when I invent the voices, I have a little tape recorder by the side here, and as I get to the voice, I say, page one, fifth line down, Professor Dumbledore, and then I read the Professor Dumbledore's first line as Professor Dumbledore into the tape. Right? And then I move on to the second voice. So when I go into the studio, I have a tape here with maybe 50 or 60 voices on it. And I keep forgetting. Every time I get to a character, I can't remember the voice from two nights ago. So I have to stop and we play the tape. And I listen to myself doing that voice, number 54 voice, whatever it is. And then it reminds me of what the voice should sound like. And that's when I record it. So it's with the help of a little tape recorder. That's how you do it. Yes, my friend. Who was the mockingbird voice? I couldn't hear. Oh yes, what happened to him? Nobody knows. I think maybe what happened is that the cat took the mockingbird out on the lawn and then just hiccuped, and I think he escaped that way. It's a good answer, isn't it? I'd hate him. No, all the children asked that question. What happened to the mockingbird? No, I think he was hiccuped out. Right? It's a good answer. All right, any adult questions? Yes, ma'am. Ah, yes, good question. What happened was that we did a live concert. I say we, meaning not the royal we, I mean me and the conductor and the orchestra. We did a live concert in Seattle to about 2,000 people, a lot of children, and a 60 boys choir. And the reception was so good, it was so wonderful, that we decided we would take do a DVD of the performance, the second performance, and edit out about three minutes of it just to show people what it was like with all the choir, the orchestra, and a very enthusiastic audience. And that, together with the CD, we are in the process of sending to every conductor of every symphony orchestra or city orchestra around America and Canada, in the hope that in a year's time they'll be able to include myself as guest narrator for maybe two performances in that city with the choir, that city's choir, who needs about 6 to 8 weeks rehearsal. And then I would go along there to do a couple of shows. And hopefully by that time, after about a year, we'll have taken in quite a few cities. And hopefully, it's my thinking that this is so good, this story is so good, and it's beautifully arranged, and the choir sounds marvelous. It could become an instant children's classic, and it's possible to have more fun with it at school with a small school orchestra, and as I said, children narrating it, and each taking the part of a different bird. So there is an opportunity for this particular piece to be done in all the schools in America as well. So that's my ambition, that hopefully if we've done it in America and Canada, we can then go and explore Europe and the other countries. Could be a nice thing to do. Yes, darling. Did you finish your homework? Did you? Almost. All right. I forgive you. How long did I take to record Harry Potter? Well, most narrators can read very quickly. I have to do a lot of voices, so I can't really rush it. And it all depends how many mistakes I make, because you make a lot of mistakes. When you listen to an audiobook, it's had all the mistakes edited out, and it sounds wonderful. It sounds as if the man or the woman never makes a mistake at all. But what happened, the first time I did it, I sat down in front of the microphone. I'd never recorded a book before. And he said, "Okay, Jim, here we go. Just keep reading till we stop you. Just say the title and the lady's name." I said, "Right. Harry Potter." He said, can we stop? That's not your normal voice, is it, Jim?" I said, no, it isn't. She said, "Well, let's use your normal voice." I said, "Right. Harry Potter." And she said, no, but more confident. Could be a little more confident. "Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Shall we do it again?" "Yes, but Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by Juki Rellins." Relic. "Okay, let's take it one more time. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's..." He said, "Can we stop? You turned your head there, Jim." I said, "Excuse me?" He said, "You did it. You turned your head. We lost you. You were not on mic." I said, "Oh, okay. Can another time?" He said, "Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling." He said, "Can we stop?" I said, "Why?" He said, "We can hear you scratching yourself." I said, "Oh." I said, he said, "Let's break for coffee, shall we?" I hadn't even recorded the title or the name of the author. 10 minutes later, that was. And then, of course, you keep stopping and starting. You have to stop for them to change the tape. And then you have to stop to have a tea break. And, of course, 10 minutes later, you stop for a pee break. You know, why not? And, of course, I'm in a little studio. And I'm inside a tiny little studio, no bigger than this, with a glass wall. And sitting the other side, there's the producer, and there's the engineer, and there's a friend. He always brings a friend in to help. Because their job is to look at me while I'm recording it to see if I make any mistake whatsoever. If I fluff a word, if I don't put a period point on the end of a sentence, if I don't, they're waiting for me to make a mistake. It's like being in a straitjacket for 6 hours a day. You can't get out. So I usually record 20 pages an hour if it's a good day. So after 5 hours, you know, and an hour's for lunch, I've done about 100 pages. So multiply that 800 pages, that's 8 days. But then, of course, while you're recording the next day, you're in a very big mood like this. You're recording, and the door opens, and somebody comes in. Sorry, Jim, can we stop? Can you do this funny scene again from yesterday? You made a couple of mistakes. And so you're in this mood, and then suddenly you have to get out of it and become this, to do the funny scene again. You know, because you've made a mistake. They found it, and they have to correct it. So it all takes time, takes time, takes time. So I would say, let's add a few more days, two weeks, to do a good Harry Potter book. It's a long time, isn't it? Yes?
Did you ever meet J.K. Rowling?
Oh, yes, yes. What happened was, I used to, when I was living in England, I'd been around for a number of years as a, oh dear, as a stand-up comedian in music hall. I became a pop singer by accident. I entertained a television rock show as a stand-up comic, and I borrowed Tommy Steele's guitar, and I played a song and sang. And afterwards, they said, can you come back next week? I said, well, I don't have much more comedy material. They said, well, you weren't very funny, but we'd want you to sing. So I suddenly became a pop singer. And a young man who was 27 years of age had just become a recording manager, and his name was George Martin. And I was George's first pop singer, myself and Cleo Lane, the jazz singer. And so I stayed with George for a couple of years. Then I became a member of the Carry On film team. They made 33 Carry On films for the cinema, and I was in about 14 of them. And so many years later, those films were sent out two or three times a week on television, like MASH. And we, so, you know, over the years, over 50 years now, these films are still being shown in England, and I can go back there now, and I'm stopped in the street by maybe, you know, a little Indian boy, a little kid who said, I saw you last night on television, I thought it was wonderful. So they're recognizing me from something I did 30 years ago. So J.K. Rowling, to get back to your question, had seen me, she knew my style, my technique, and she said, I trust Jim to do it. And she only ever once commented on one voice that she thought could be a Yorkshire accent instead of a Scottish accent. So out of the 250 voices, just to be picked up for one of them is not a bad record. But yes, she's a lovely, lovely lady, and I really do think that she is a genius. She wrote these 7 books without the aid of computers. She had all 7 stories in her head before she started writing the first one. And she wrote it in, a little cafe in Edinburgh. And the final one was written in a hotel in Edinburgh, or finished in a hotel room in Edinburgh. And she said as soon as she finished, she got the big felt tip, and she wrote on the wall, J.K. Rowling's finished the last Harry Potter in this room, da-da-da. And they didn't sue her. I think they put a plastic sheet over it, and they preserved that. And the funny thing was that that hotel where she finished the last book was next to the little coffee bar where she started the first one. You know, so that was lovely. Any more questions? Now, let's. Yeah, the little boy here.
Yes, sir. Where did you get the book in the library? Where did you get the book in the library? Oh, I think you can buy it anywhere. Go to any bookshop, and you can buy all the Harry Potter books. And we've got these. Did you go back that story to them tonight? The Schubert? Can you think about it? Do you remember? Yeah? Well, you can find that here. Good.
Any more questions? Yes, and you again. You still haven't finished your homework.
Where do I live?
I just live down Park Avenue at 58th Street. Are you coming to have coffee one morning? No? Any more questions then? Yes, sir. No, we did. There was no time frame for that. The Schubert had been out a couple of years. They did it with a narrator in Southern California. I listened to that version, and something was lacking. It was just, I think, the narrator did not have the professionalism that was asked for. I couldn't tell the difference between his voice and the birds' voices, and that's not what it should be, you know. Hopefully you don't overlap, you know, your voice sounds like the birds or vice versa. So I don't think he was a professional narrator, so they just used that as an example, as a test record, and that was the one I listened to and said, I think it's one of the best stories I've ever heard. So there was no time limit, I took about a week to do it, Thank you. All right, that's the last one, is it? No more. Thank you. You've been lovely.
Hi, darling.
I'm just in the ages.
Lovely. Thank you.
Oh yes, I forgot to.
And just
if you have
trust
Bammy on this. So there we go.
Oh, I've got one. Okay. I tell you what, don't let's ruin it. Let's put it on here, shall we? On there?
Good idea.
Is that okay? Okay.